guys, welcome back to We Watch Movie. I'm Mike.
I'm Jay.
And we've got a special, special, double special Patreon review for you today.
Oh, wow.
This is a Wham! Book report.
Oh, shit. Rock until you drop. Dance until your feet fall off.
This is our review of the Curtis Richards novelization of the original Halloween film. We've gone through and we've taken out just about every single difference between the book and the movie, which you'll be astounded by the amount of differences, the amount of backstory they give Michael. Not in that Rob Zombie nasty fucking Skechers footwear way.
Oh, shit.
None of that Rob Zombie, he's mad and he's a serial killer because he grew up in a fucking trailer park horse shit. This gives a weird, mystical, fistical fucking backstory, and I'm not sure that I like it. I'm not sure I'd want it to be Halloween lore, but it's a nice attempt.
It fisted us, and we were not okay with it.
Yeah, Justin, thank you so much. Justin sent us that badass 112 Halloween Michael Myers figure. You're a good dude. You've always been a huge supporter of the channel. We appreciate you. If you guys want to get in on the Patreon stuff, the link is down below.
There you go.
All right, so the novelization. It's fucking crazy. From the opening words of this book, they describe some shit about Michael.
Michael grew up in Camp Crystal Lake.
Yeah, he's from Kentucky.
Was best friends with Jason Voorhees, and then a terrible tragedy happened. They ran out of floaties.
KFC.
Michael couldn't swim.
Ran out of fried chicken. I'm gonna read you verbatim the opening paragraph.
Great, I love it.
Because it's fucking crazy. Literally, the wind that swept into young Michael Myers' body was one that of dirty lust.
It gets there.
Dirty lust. Here we go. The opening paragraph in the prologue. The horror started.
Prologue?
Shut up!
With this fucking.
I'm trying to fucking read!
Submarine sandwich. Can I get the prologue?
Pierogi? Can I get the pierogi?
Provolone, you stupid.
Prologue, bitch!
Pierogies. The horror started on the eve of Samhain, in a foggy vale in Northern Ireland, in the dawn of the Celtic race.
Oh,
at once started, it trod the earth forevermore. Like my dick!
Oh, nasty.
Wreaking its savagery suddenly, swiftly, with incredible ferocity.
Chlamydia.
Then, its lust sated, it shrank back into the mists of time for a year, a decade, a generation perhaps, but it slept only and did not die.
That's my sex life.
For it could not be killed.
It keeps coming!
And on the eve before Samhain, it would stir. And if the lust were powerful enough, it would rise to fulfill the curse invoked in so many Samhains before. It's about morning wood.
Basically, that's it.
Then the people would bolt their doors. I'm a doctor, lock your doors!
Oh.
Why are you gonna be a doctor to tell me lock your doors, Sartain? What the fuck? Scant good it did them, for the thing laughed at locks and bolts, and besides, they were the unwary.
I feel like the laugh
always
would be like,
the unwary.
The laugh would be like, you have lock bolted doors? Me have some of
ouch. They thought that the beginning of winter was the start of like the dead, and then they were afraid that it would never come back again.
Well, so, it was ancient superstition. Like back then in those times, like they celebrate Samhain or Halloween differently. God. Sounds like a fucking goddamn discontinued Lowe's merchandise. Hey, you trying to do Samhain? No, that sucks. So they would do traditions and things like that to ward off evil spirits because they felt like their crops would die or whatever it was. Because back then, you know, it was a very superstitious time. So I'm okay with that. I mean, do you not see how Lucky Charms started?
They would have these big festivals. They would have a giant fire. They would dance around
the fire. I kind of think it's the coolest party I've ever heard of in my life.
Yeah.
And I want to go.
They would also ward off evil goblins and witches and spirits from creating haberdashery. And they would do this. And these druids.
Haberdasheries, they would sell hats.
Notice the word druid in there, Halloween 6, The Curse of Paul Rudd. These druid priests would come and they would dictate who was going to die in the coming years, who was going to live, who was going to get married, who was going to do all that shit like that. While this was going on, these hot, sexy virgins would be dancing around the fire and you could smell the lust.
Mbabawa!
Mbabawa!
Mbabawa! Yeah.
Bumblebee tuna. One of the particular versions, the most beautiful of all, Deirdre.
Is she a version?
And everybody wanted her the most, and there was just lust in the fucking air.
Mm-hmm.
This ties back into Michael later on. One person in the group named Inda, and he wanted her worse than fucking anyone. Now, Inda eventually is going to be the one who takes over Michael Myers, so listen closely.
And by the way, that guy had a shriveled ass arm, and he reminded me of the dude from Scary Movie 2. He's like, stop the shit out of it! Take my strong hand, child!
Shut up! So everybody made fun of him because he came out butt first.
Well, I mean, why not?
You'd never go ass to mouth.
He was born in prison. It's like, he was already used to the atmosphere. So, but yeah, he came out and he was deformed, but he liked this girl. And he thought that she was really super sweet and cute and whatever, and was asking his brothers and bros, like, hey, I think I might have a chance. Like, oh!
She'd rather fuck Uncle's goat, Peter!
She'd rather put a dog's dick in her mouth. Yeah. And he'd be like, oh, so you're saying there's not a chance.
Everybody made fun of him. He goes up to her one day. She was washing her panties in a creek. He walks up to her, and he tries to talk to her. He's like, hey.
By the way, Didre. Just talk to her. It wasn't any rapey thing.
He wanted to court her.
He didn't try to surprise her. Like, I felt bad for the guy. Like,
I'm terrible.
Like, yeah, it was a bad situation. Like, he just... You know, she happened to be bathing her with her tits out. What do you want me to do?
She ran away from him and started screaming, he's trying to rape me. Now, fast forward to the night before Samhain. They're having the big fire, the big dance. Everybody's dancing
around.
Who
was the other guy, though?
They're happy. The other guy was Culligan. Culain was a more formidable suitor for her, who everybody expected her to be with. Now, they announced this, that he was going to be the one to be wed to her. So at this great dance, they're dancing around the fire. They're having a great old time. They're all hooked arm in arm. But fucking Indo was pissed. And he felt terrible about himself.
He was high on Percocets.
He had nothing to live for. He'd been smoking that turkey. Hoo, hoo. He was carrying around this foot-long blade that they used to, like, kill goats and shit with. And he stabbed her. Not only did he stab her, he stabbed him first. He goes up, he stabs him first. The guy falls down. She looks down. Then he starts to stab her. He doesn't just stab her, but he stabs her titties. As you always call, Michael wants to slash your titties.
Slash them titties
Michael,
open.
In the slash. Slash your titties.
Even the Aeolus.
Yeah. Fucking cut her up. Killed them both right there. In a fit of anger and embarrassment. Now, immediately, the whole group attacked him and ripped him to shreds.
Yeah.
All they had left was his heart and his head.
They were good enough to stop at the head and the heart. They're like, okay, well, we got the heart.
Here's a nice piece of shit.
And here's head. So what we can do with these?
So what they decided to do was they had this hill, the Hill of Fiends, as they called it. Ooh. Now, they would bury, like, honorable members of society in one place, but they would bury shitty fucking people.
I feel like we'd be buried there.
Yeah, definitely. At the Hill of Fiends, where we
watch
the
movie
goes
to die. That's where YouTube is already with us.
Now King Gwyneth Paltrow said to the shaman, he's like, put a curse on motherfucker. So they put a curse on him, and the shaman put a curse on him, and let me read you exactly what the curse says.
Oh.
Okay? The curse says, thy shall roam the earth till the end of time, reliving thy foul deed and thy foul punishment, and may the god Muk Allah visit every affliction upon thy spirit forevermore. The chapter would end with an explanation of Halloween as we know it today, bastardized from this primitive time.
Well, you know, I've been married before, so it's not doing much for me. I feel like the guy that wrote and helped to make Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers, probably read this novel and took a lot of inspiration from
the runes,
the prologue of this film.
Of all the attempts at a reasoning behind what Michael does, now we don't want a reasoning, it's scary to not have one, but all the attempts at a reasoning behind it and how it happens, to me, I think this is the coolest one I've ever seen. This is the best one, I think. And I know I keep mentioning the lust thing, but it's so funny because everybody always ties Michael to sex because his sister had just had sex because she was naked when he killed her. And it's so nasty, though. It goes into that. It mentions at several points in this that when he's first...
Michael was fucking...
when he's first following Lori... in the station wagon, it mentions that he gets aroused, but it's not a happy arousal. It's like a painful arousal. Like, he doesn't even like it.
Because he's never busted a nut in his life.
It's very fucking weird, but we'll get into all that.
A lot of built up shit.
So chapter 2 goes on, and we actually get introduced, we're in present day now, and little Michael Myers is picking out his clown costume, the one that we all know he'll eventually kill Judith in. But his grandmother's there with his mom, Edith, and they're talking, and his grandmother goes to this crazy story about how, all you guys are all little bitches today. It's like, back in the day, Samhain meant something. Halloween meant something. Back in the day, people didn't just fucking toilet paper people's houses. They would actually fucking...
put their wainers on the plexiglass.
Look at it! They would actually cut off the heads of cows. Someone cut off the head of someone took a hog and stuffed it in their chimney while there was a fire going. That smells just like baloney! Edith is like, hey, Michael doesn't need to hear this shit. He's already having trouble. And the grandma's like, what are you talking about? What kind of trouble? And she's like, well, he hears voices. He's been getting in fights in school. He's been getting in fights with his sister. He's been pissing his fucking bed, Jim.
I did that yesterday.
Yeah, I know.
Well, that's not a big thing.
But we all know.
It's whatever. It's rubber just the sheets. Alcohol. Rubber sheets.
But yeah, he's been pissing his bed. All this stuff's been going on. He's not killing parakeets like in the Rob Zombie version. But he has been hearing voices, angry voices that tells them to hate people, that tells them to do mean things, and things of that nature. The light just went out.
It did.
Solid.
I got darker.
The bogeyman.
I got darker.
The grandma mentions now, and you were right, his great-grandfather, his great-grandfather Nordstrom, I'm probably saying that wrong, but Nordstrom, the great-grandpa did almost the same thing that Enda did. He eventually went to the Grand Dance, and he pulled out a revolver and shot dead a couple right there. So this has happened. This is something that's sort of tied to his family line in a weird way.
They never connect them.
You go on and you meet Judith for the first time, and she's butt naked in front of the mirror.
I love how they describe her too.
Yeah,
butt juicy.
It gets
juicy butt cheeks.
Real deep. Danny shows up, and Judith's like, "I got the house myself. No fucking Michael to deal with. None of that shit." But Michael does show up with a group of trick or treaters wearing his clown mask, and the kids are like, "Hey, give us candy." And she's like, "What if I don't?" And one of the kids' voices from the back goes, "We'll kill you." And she's like, "Michael, was that you?" Like, she knows her little brother's got
immediately
some fucked up shit going on.
Red flags. Yeah. Red flags.
But they leave. They go on. Danny comes over. And they
give him more of a backstory.
They do.
Yeah.
And they describe the sex scene in detail. All they've ever done before is fucked in a car. Yeah. But tonight, mommy's not home. We're going to fuck in the bed. She literally, as he takes her bosom, round fucking mouth.
Everything they have built, we will tear it down.
She's like, "So this is what it's like to have sex in a bed." And I was like, "Ooh. Damn, dude. Take her to a Wendy's."
Whatever. It doesn't matter.
At least once. But yeah, they go in great detail about that whole sex scene. But that is when you find Michael in the street having his thoughts. And they go really deep into his thoughts. And it talks about how Michael is the voices come inside of his head, and he's suddenly enraged at the noises that make, fact that they're together. And it's like, hearing his parents like that never bothered him, because he could tell it was out of love, but there was something about the way that they were
he was disgusted
fucking,
he was disgusted by his sister.
It enraged him, and that's where the lust comes out. The sweeping lust.
To a point of
sweeping,
like...
Sweeping lust.
Oh, sweeping.
Yeah, it's all about
street
lust.
Sweeper. God
robbing
damn.
Sex member.
Michael just wants to get off. But yeah, it was... It was an unnatural rage that came from nowhere, that in the novel it describes that Michael is hearing the sounds of ecstasy from his sister and her boyfriend, and it just fills him with this poison, this undeniable rage that he wants to end her life for whatever reason.
You ever just have to jerk off? You're like, "I have to jerk off today."
Yeah.
Verbatim, the moment Michael feels this, it says, "It was the voice. The verse stirred..." I've got varicose veins.
Yeah.
It was the voice. The voice stirred up the hatred. It had done so in his dreams, and now it was doing so in real life. It had begun with the strange pictures in his head at night, pictures of people he'd never seen, oh, maybe in comic books or on television, but never in real life. People in strange costumes, animal skins, armor, leather, drinking and dancing wildly around a fire, back to Enda and that whole situation. One couple in particular, they looked like Judy and Danny, madly in love with each other, dancing in a circle around a huge bonfire while he, Michael, stood in the crowd, hating them, burning up with jealousy. Then a voice came to his head while he...
"You gonna fuck my sister?"
"Put it back!"
God damn!
A voice telling him to stop the dancing lovers. A voice had become louder, clearer, and more demanding lately, and it dictates more compelling.
And I can't read.
He had begun to believe that he'd listened to the voice, did it what it told him to do. Maybe the voice would go away and leave him alone. It was no longer a dream voice. It spoke to him during the waking time, too. It had spoken loudly to him tonight, even as he went from house to house begging candy. Even as he played his games at the party, it had directed him to return home once. And that's what he did. He does it. He does it just like the movie.
The novel plays out exactly like the film. A little bit more detail, but not much more.
The only difference...
He stabs her like a...
50 times.
The death...
But
the death scene, specifically when he's stabbing her, it's fucking vicious. The way that it's described in the novel is way more vicious than you saw on, original.
I pretty much translated direct.
They say he stabbed her fucking vagina.
I don't remember.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, they said that he stabbed her.
You read into a little bit.
I did not. No. I didn't want to read it. I didn't want to fucking have that happen. But he was like, the first thing when she holds her hand up and he cuts her hand, but then he stabs into her chest and there's this squirt of blood. And it's talking about how Michael is getting exquisitely into this. He's loving it. And that smell is making him fucking get off.
"Give me back that flay of fish. Give me that fish."
Oh. And he looks down at the flesh that used to be his sister, and it's unrecognizable because of how much he fucked it up.
And basically, he says he could have stabbed her anywhere up to 50 times. The official coroner's report says 31 times.
50.
So, anywhere between 31 and 50 you can go with. But yeah, the only actual, legit difference between the movie All the way up to he walks outside and he takes off the mask and he hears the voice saying Michael, and it's his parents. The only difference is in the book, he stops. He feels an insatiable hunger out of nowhere and he stops at the fridge like I do when I wake up in the middle of the night. And I got like 2 hours before work and I'm just like, I'm gonna eat a fucking donut. And I just like chuck milk. That's what he does. He feels this hunger and he stuffs a cookie in his mouth and he drinks milk. Yeah. And then he wipes it away from his face, leaving a smear of milk and blood. It's the grossest fucking combination of all time.
You know,
just imagine, just be like, oh, fucking your sister's titty blood and milk on your
face. When traumatic shit happens, like get that vitamin D milk.
Oh man,
go ahead and do it.
But that's the only difference there. From there, you take it off, and we go to the court case. The court case does a lot of actually what the television version of Halloween did. It adds some backstory. The judge is talking, and he's talking about this little boy, and they got to the point where they questioned the boyfriend. They were even mean to the boyfriend because they're like, it had to be him.
This kid just fucked her, and there was semen in her. So they had assumed.
And this kid's so angelic and innocent seeming, and he's basically admitting to everything. He's not denying anything.
I kind of imagine Michael Myers, this young kid, saying it in a very calm, musically kind of way. You know, like, you know how little kids are? Like, they're not really... He detailed all of it, but it's not like in a way that's vicious. You know what I mean? Like he was saying it kind of like if he had been reciting a bedtime story or something to someone. Yeah. And as they're talking to him and he's describing this brutal, heinous act that he did, and for whatever reason he wanted to do it, and he was fully in control, he knew what he was doing, the judge of the case presiding over it is still taken aback by the kid's age, because I think the novel does describe that, you know, the laws were set up in a way that they could try him as an adult, but he wasn't quite yet a teenager yet, and it was a really hard case to actually look at. And the judge knew that the original presiding judge in the novel knew that he was fucked up. Like, there was major problems. This motherfucker has snorted Xanax off a donkey's dick. It's bad. And like, he's like, I feel bad about sending him to the institute, but I gotta do it. Like, I gotta do it. And he does say that on his 21st birthday, he'll come back to stand trial again for the murder of Judith Myers. As an adult, yeah.
But only if he continues to show signs that this sort of behavior would continue.
But then you get introduced to Sam Loomis at this point, and Dr. Loomis is the guy that takes over the case of Michael Myers and starts treating Michael. But you do get to the point where he's talking to the judge and saying that he doesn't know why. He doesn't have any concrete evidence, but Michael can never be let out again. There's something about Michael that's not natural. There's something about Michael that's not normal, and that... Basically, Michael has had the run of the yard. I'm going to show you how it's done. I'm going to show you how it's done. Make you say, Daddy, I don't want none. Like, Michael has basically, he has made the worst bullies in the asylum his bitch. And the guards and everything else. Because there's something, what Dr. Loomis can't, he never says supernatural. Dr. Loomis in the novel never says supernatural, but there's something about Michael, it's very
grabs
omen.
A hold of him tightly.
Well, it's very,
it flows like a harp through him.
Daily and nightly. Will it ever stop?
I don't know.
I mean, I'll turn off the lights.
It'll glow.
But Dr. Loomis is aware that there is something on the edge that is doing something for Michael. He doesn't know what, but it's off. There's something off-kilter about the whole thing. Helter-skelter. You know, if someone fucks with him, he won't do anything physically, but then something really awful will happen to them later on. So Michael's got the run of the show. And the judge is like, this is all, what the fuck? How much peyote did you smoke? I didn't smoke enough. Yeah. Obviously, you are just Judy Wannabe. Like, he has these arguments with the doctor or with the judge, and the judge is like, well, unless you bring me concrete evidence, I'm going to let Michael go.
Yeah, and actually that brings us to a point here. I want you to actually read this because it's actually an excerpt from the book of Loomis reading. But yeah, like you said, weird things are happening. Like, one guy played a salt prank on him when he turned over the salt shaker. Kick his ass, sea bass.
Salt.
The guy woke up with stomach cramps.
Almost died.
One kid messed with him, ended up with a rash. All this crazy shit's happening, but Loomis can't prove any of it. And the judge is basically like, look, the only reason I'm even listening to this is because of your great reputation. And he's like, but you better bring me some hard evidence or I'm letting this kid go because you sound like a crazy person. But here's the actual scene here if you want to read it in Loomis's voice.
Judge, the boy's story and attitude haven't changed a whit since the hearing. Though I've spent nearly 2 hours a day with him every day for 6 months, I have nothing to go on but my experience and my hunches. And I tell you, out of the depth of all I have learned and observed in 15 of exploration of the human mind, Michael Myers may be the most dangerous person I have ever handled. Do you, Sudoku?
Wendy's fries, only $1.
Wendy's fries is only $1? I'm already there. But yeah.
So at one point, Michael Myers asked Dr. Loomis, the judge says, hey, you better give me some shit or I'm letting the kid go. Mm. So the next thing that happens is Michael asks Loomis, can we have a Halloween party?
Yes, we can.
And Loomis is like, you little fuck! What? You of all... But then he realizes, this is my chance to catch this little fuck in the ass.
I like what you said, though, because there was one moment that they do describe in the novel where Dr. Loomis is having a session with Michael, and Michael's talking, kind of like he did in the Rob Zombie remake, of like, well, what night? I don't remember anything. And he was like, well, the night you killed your sister's titties. And he was like, I don't remember it, though. And he was like, I know what you're doing, Michael. No one else knows, but I know. You little... There's recording.
Too bad you couldn't learn that with Jamie.
Yeah, well... He had learned his mistake.
Fucking write it!
First one.
But yeah, Michael Myers asked for this Halloween party. Loomis looks at it as a chance to catch him in the act so that he can keep him locked up in Smith's Grove.
He wants evidence.
Yeah, so they have the Halloween party. They're playing musical chairs. And this one little girl steals Michael's musical
chair. Icebox from
Little
Giants.
And Loomis is like, aha! Now I've got you. Like, get through this thing on! But yeah, so the next piece of the Halloween party is they go bobbing for apples. Now Loomis knows this is the perfect time for Michael to drown this little bitch right in that fucking apple trough.
You like your apples? Well, you gonna love this fucking deep dish.
It's like, must like Halloween too. He tried to fuck that girl in hot tub.
Oh, goddamn, Michael.
But yeah, so the little girl goes to bob for the apples. What Loomis doesn't suspect, and what happens next, is that the lights go out in the gymnasium. Now, when this
baby,
happens,
when the lights go out,
Loomis
runs
towards it, knowing that this has to be something that's gonna happen. He runs towards the apple bobbing machine. He runs towards it, tackles,
the tub, yeah.
Knocks the tub over. The lights come back on. The little girl's sitting there. She's almost drowned. She starts to spit up water or whatever. Michael's all the way across the gymnasium, like fucking shooting lamps.
No, yeah,
like,
no, he was like, the way the novel describes it, they do CPR on the girl to pump her lungs, you know, out of the water or whatever. And then she spits the water out, and he looks over, and, like, he's looking for Michael. Dr. Loomis is like, what? And then Michael is, like, standing
he's
over.
He's got the pumps.
Like, Michael, he's standing over under the basketball. Like, it says, under the basketball backboard. He's like, I'm feeling much better now.
It's all a moot point, though, because the judge... The judge, hell-bent on making Loomis provide proof, has a massive coronary and dies. The new judge that they brings in is far less sympathetic to Michael's shit. He buys Loomis's whole spiel immediately and says, yeah, whatever, fuck that kid. Locks Michael up for 15 years. And then this is when we get back into the actual movie, because the next scene you have in the book is chapter 5, is Michael and Loomis and the nurse driving up to the sanitarium. Everything plays out exactly like it does in the movie, except for one little scene where Loomis gets out when they see the mental patients everywhere. Loomis gets out and he asks the mental patient what's going on. He probably asks him where Michael is.
I have a toaster that lives.
When Loomis gets back in the car, the nurse says, what did he say? He's like, he asked me if I could find his purple lawnmower.
I mean, that's an important question.
I mean,
it was true. He probably did ask him that, but he was like, you know, also the inmate is excited and they're ecstatic because the inmate also says to Loomis, the evil is gone from here.
And that's and this one, the inmate says it rather than Loomis.
And that actually was fucking cool.
Yeah.
Because, like, you notice all the, when you watch the original movie, and you notice they're all, like, kind of outside, and they're kind of like, you didn't get to see much of them, but in the novel it explains that they're doing celebratory things. A lot of them are, like, spinning around, like, yeah, fuck yeah.
Hit me, baby, one more time.
Boom, bitch. I'm Britney, bitch. And they're doing that kind of stuff. And then, like,
Macarena, Macarena, Macarena.
Yeah, and they're doing that kind of stuff, and it's because they know that the evil of Michael Myers, because just like a dog would notice or sense it, even the most psychopathic person in that asylum knew something was bad wrong with Michael Myers, and they never wanted to fuck with him or stay around him. So he says, the evil is gone from here. That's fucking cool. I mean, if they had put that in the movie, I would have been fine with that. Like, that was cool. And then
kind of direct correlation to Halloween 2018, too, because you remember when they talked to Michael, all the inmates around him were going crazy.
Because they did. Because they noticed that, like, dogs, again, like, they have this sense. Their hackles get up. And, I mean, also, what's different...
They find a dead security guard.
Yeah, and Loomis is examining it, and that gives Michael the chance. And by the way, another difference is that Michael does let out a growl or a sound of pain. She does something to him in the car, in the novel... And it makes
bites his hand.
Bites his hand, yeah. And he lets out a fucking growl of pain, like, he does, fucking bitch!
She does that several times.
My finger!
He does that several times in this, too. And like, when he gets stabbed, he will let out a dark howl. Like, he'll, but he never fucking Rob Zombie talks. But yeah, so that whole scene happens, and then a lot of the stuff plays the exact same way. You introduce Lori the exact same way. A lot of the shit happens the exact same way. The only difference between the interaction between Lori and her dad is they go a little bit more into the backstory of the Myers house, and how her dad had a terrible time selling it. Everybody in the town knew what had happened. Finally, the only reason she's dropping the keys off there is because this family from New York, who doesn't give a fuck about
New York,
has bought the house, and he refers to the house as the White Turkey. I don't know why. A butterball, fuck me in the ass. But they go a little bit more to that backstory, but that's pretty much the only difference there. Now, Loomis goes through the exact same beats. There's a little bit longer of a conversation between him and Dr. Wynn, but pretty much the same stuff. He stops at the same gas station. The only difference in this one is that Loomis has a wife. He also has a small kid. Or not a small kid, but he also has a son.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
Because as soon as he... I like how he said, like he had to take a piss, he had to figure out what's going on, and then call his wife. And then he prioritized in the least important, I'll call my wife. No! Not since Thursday.
She probably asked him if he'd pissed.
No! Not since Thursday. Yes, I'm all right. Stop worrying. After this, I'll sleep for a week. 2 weeks! But for now, I must stop him. Of course it's possible.
It's like Adrian in Rocky IV. You can't win!
But I know him. And when he gets there, God help us. Okay, they drum his finger. Because at this point, Dr. Loomis is like drumming his finger. He's like, all right, get the fuck over.
I'll call you Monday, Linda.
Oh, listen, dear. When they come around trick-or-treating tonight, why don't you just not answer the door? I know it's ridiculous, but just this once... Could you be a goddamn solid? it's weird. Like, he doesn't... It's almost like he doesn't give a fuck that he has a wife. And it, literally, the novel explains that to the least importance is that he calls his wife first.
And then later on, there's a scene where... in the movie, where Loomis and Brackett meet, and the toy store's been broken into. When Brackett says, give me 10 minutes or whatever, Loomis thinks about his son and how his son was telling him, hey, it's amazing you can buy alcohol, but not weed. And his son thought, yeah, but still it'll be decades before they fucking sell head shops in Hattonville. You know? And that's basically it. But in this, yeah, he has a wife and a kid. But there's a lot of stuff from here on that's mostly like the movie. A couple of main differences that you find out is they go a little bit deeper into the Lori in the classroom scene where they're talking about fate.
Yeah.
They go a little bit deeper than that, and this is the first time Lori sees Michael. And in this, they explain she sees him the same way Tommy sees him by the schoolyard, whereas neither of them are even sure if he's wearing a mask. It just looks like a really, really fucking pale guy.
Staying in the shadows.
They both explain that his eyes are extremely purple and his lips are extremely red. Well, blood-stained red. Weird.
I didn't think we were dealing with the goddamn Joker here, by the way. I didn't like the way they described him. The dark...
It's hard to tell if he had the mask on, even. But no, I mean, wouldn't see his lips, right?
You wouldn't see red lipstick. I mean, yeah. They actually, at one point, they do describe a red outline of a mouth. And I'm like, what the fuck was Michael doing? He's like,
weird.
I saw this on QVC.
Boogity, boogity, boogity.
But also, difference...
tell some of the crypt.
Besides the more exploration of fate and that overall theme of Halloween 1978 that they do in the classroom in the novel... They do, there is a different scene. When Tommy is getting bullied and he drops the pumpkin, Michael doesn't stop the kid, you know, that one of the bullies that's running out of the gate. He actually goes up to Tommy, and Tommy is trying to pick up the pieces of the pumpkin, and he sees this weird guy, and he was like, you know, trying to talk to him, and then...
Michael wasn't, the kid was trying to talk to him.
Yeah, Loomis, yeah, I mean, the kid, Tommy, was trying to talk to Michael, and Michael's just standing there in the shadows, and he can't really make out what he looks like.
He did see a scar on his chin, though.
So wait, it's even weird. Said that like a zigzag scar on the face. That's a fucking.
It's hard to tell
mask.
If Michael had a mask on or what was going on.
I don't know. That was kind of unsure. But Michael does make a move for Tommy, and then Tommy runs away. And then Michael gets back in his house. You run away from me, motherfucker. I'm gonna tell you what it's all about. You need to join Golden Glove Boxing. And you know, gets in the car and does that whole scene. But the reason why Michael was following Tommy was based on that scene. And in that scene, originally in the novel. Not originally, but in the novel, Tommy was running down the block, trying to get away from this crazy, weird guy that had approached him in the schoolyard.
So. Yeah, and we go through a lot of the same beats. One interesting thing that happens when Lori gets home, her mother's actually there in the novel, and her mother actually gives another little piece of strange backstory, or a little hovering piece of information, where she talks about how they... Because Lori's been thinking a lot since she dropped the keys off to Meyer's house, and he sees her there. He reminds her of Judith in the novel. And there's one point in the novel where he's looking at someone else, and he's like, she doesn't remind him of Judith. But then again, they don't have to. They don't even have to be women.
Yeah.
So there's a keen interest to Lori based on the fact that she reminds him of Judith, but it's not this overwhelming sense that it has to be her. But when Lori gets...
Michael just wants to kill.
Yeah. When Lori gets home, though, her mom's there talking about it, and she brings up the Myers killings or whatever because it's been bothering her. She's been thinking about it a lot. But her mom says, but it's interesting that you mention it. If you went to church more often, you'd understand why.
Ooh.
Lori says, huh? She says, yes, you see, the Myers case was mentioned by Reverend Peters in last Sunday's sermon.
Peters!
he started of reminding us that Halloween was coming up this week. And there's kind of a theme here that, like, and throughout this entire novel, that Halloween as we know it is this retail sort of thing. Like, it's not the real shit that Halloween's really about. And then she says, he started by reminding us that Halloween was coming up this week, and he said some real interesting things about the origins of Halloween and how it goes back to the festivals aimed at warding off demons at harvest time way back when. What does Myers have to do with the case? Well, Reverend Peter said the Myers case, which happened on Halloween 15 years ago, reminds us that true evil still exists in this world. He said that, like everything else, we've tried to deodorize evil and put some right guard
on that bitch from Charles Barkley.
Put it in a bright new package, and you can buy it at the supermarket for 5 cents off with a coupon, which the grandma was bitching about, too. Yeah. She's like, this isn't some fucking hoochie-poochie holiday. Then along comes something like the Myers case, and we're left with our mouths open looking into the, what do you call it? The heart of darkness. Maybe that's why God puts devils like the Myers kid on earth to keep us aware of the darker side of human nature.
I like that.
That's a possible conjecture to why Myers exists.
But that's a really cool fucking statement, and that's a really cool... And God damn... There are things about this novel that I would definitely have never included in the film, but stuff like that, just adds...
That
like,
I would have put in the film.
Yeah, it adds
that was
the
cool.
ambiance to what's fucking happening and what's going down.
It's that perfect... It doesn't explain it, but it adds a layer of thought behind it, which is the great thing about Myers. And this whole novel does a great job of all of that.
The only thing I really didn't like about a lot of it, and I can understand why they included it, because it would make sense from the druidic connection, that Michael always has had this... boner.
That's exactly what I was going to
say. Yeah, he always had this fucking boner when he wanted to kill somebody. He always had this fucking thing in his... I think the novel describes his sex between his legs was throbbing with delight. Every time he looked, I'm like, God damn! And I'm like, so Michael Myers was killing all these people, and he had the longest wood of all time. He was like, my sex is on fire!
I think one of the things that you always translate to serial killers that, like, a lot of actual serial killers that exist inside, a lot of them had a repressed sexuality of some way. Some of them were gay and ashamed of it. All these different things, all these serial killers throughout time. One of the things they tied into this that was really interesting is my favorite part of the novel actually comes from what you hate, not the throbbing member shit. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I don't like that.
But they do. This book provides you something that no film or nothing else really does, and it gives you some shots from Michael Myers' point of view. Not only as a kid with the voices, as we mentioned, but at the point right before he kills Annie for his first kill, they actually say from Michael's point of view. It says he returned to the main house and watched some more. The sex between his legs throbbed in an unpleasant way. The voice was whispering something he couldn't.
Chris Hansen. Comes up from the left door, I'm like, what are you doing here tonight?
Cookies and condoms?
What are you doing out here tonight?
The voice was whispering something to him he couldn't make out yet, but he knew that if he waited, it would get louder. So he is being directed by this end of voice, by this feeling that he has in him. That's almost why he waits in the shadows. He's not gotten his directions yet in a weird sort of way. But there's a scene earlier where they mention that Michael gets aroused, but not in a pleasurable way. It hurts, like it's uncomfortable. And in this, it says the exact same thing. He throbs, but not in a pleasurable way.
I always like to think
it's a repressed hate for his own sexuality. out. He gets off on killing people, but he likes it. It's a fucked up weird
thing. I can understand, like, that could be a real serial killer that does that kind of shit, but it's Michael Myers. Like, I don't want Michael Myers to be a goddamn sex fiend that he's, like, a fucking, like, a rapist.
It's not,
that,
though.
Well, because the way that it reads, if you guys read this, you guys should definitely check it out either way. To me, it read in those parts, it felt like I was reading the goddamn novelizations of Norman Bates thinking about his mother, getting a big boner, looking at women in the shower because he sees titties in a vagina and he's like, I love my mom. And like, I mean, I don't know, like, but the thing is, Michael Myers having a boner while he's fucking killing people, it didn't really do it for me. I know that in this novelization,
he's being... Did it make your sex throb?
No, well, not mine. Like, I went to Pornhub afterwards, though. But, I mean, it did feel like...
I didn't know why.
It felt like they were trying so hard to rely on that druidic thing from the beginning of the novel to kind of tie into this. But they never said that the Edna guy or whatever, the one that was shunned by Deidre... had a fucking boner.
That's what I was going to say, though.
Yeah, so, I mean, I know, but I'm just saying, like, I didn't like that part. I just felt like it was too... Like, I never... Like, you have Freddy Krueger, who's a pedophile. Like, that's what he is. Jason just kills because he wants to please his mother. I don't want to think of Michael as a fucking rapey dude that just wants to get off on the fucking side, and that's why he's killing people.
They also mention in the book, though, that the time he killed Judith when she was butt naked, it wasn't the first time he watched her through the keyhole. He'd watched her several times. But he'd seen her naked. He'd watched her from afar. And
Well, that was before the internet.
But the thing is, though, I get what you're saying. Like, you don't want to think Michael as a rapey dude. Yeah. Like, you don't want to think of him like that, but... For a long time, people have connected Myers to, like, this arousal, this strange arousal, because the first kill he had was his naked sister, and almost a shame over that. Now, the book ties into that, because think about it. When Enda goes up to that girl, that's his first... He's full of innocence. He's this fucked up, ugly dude, but he still has this heart of innocence that he thinks because he loves her and his feelings are pure, that he has a chance with the most beautiful girl of all. And he goes up to her and she screams rape, and she completely fucks up his head when it comes to women and sexual experiences or whatever, because automatically you tie love to sex.
So, yeah,
and I think that fucked him. And when you go back to serial killers, a lot of that's tied to sexual what's the word I'm looking for?
Just gratification.
Sexual fucked upness. God damn it, what the fuck?
It's deviance.
Not deviance. When you hold something back. Fucking...
What?
Repressed sexual rage. That's it. That's okay. What I was looking for.
Well, he's not gay. But... No, I know what you mean, though. But yeah, okay, so... If you're gonna do that, though, in the novel, you have to take out Michael Myers as an entity at all and say, this is just this fucking leprechaun motherfucker from the Irish days enacting his vengeance on all girls that turned him down. Well, I know it is, but I mean, in that way, it's stupid. It's even more dumb. Like, I don't want to have Michael be a rapey dude, and I definitely don't want some fucking leprechaun from the old days or the druidic days to be like, no, a girl rejected me, stabby, stab, stab.
The soul of Enda, though, to me, the soul of Enda goes back to, like, with a lot of these other people, the soul of Enda doesn't know how to process sexual feelings, so it's not an actual sexual feeling he's having.
He wanted to do the girl.
The first sexual feeling he had is tied into this horrible, embarrassing, humiliating fucking moment, and that ties it into anger, so when he feels a sexual impulse, it's fueled with rage, and he wants to kill instead of fuck. So it's really not a sexual thing.
I don't know.
He hates his boner. Well, he hates his dick.
I know, but I don't think, you know, even at that point, Michael Myers, as the entity that he is, that we know, if you're novelizing him, he should be no more. If you're gonna go inside his thoughts, the voices raging in his mind and what he's gonna do, his body reacting and sweating and whatever, that's fine. Him getting a boner, though, it's like it's going to goddamn 50 Shades of Grey. Like, you want to throw that in there, like, you feel you need to do it, and you don't really need to do it. You could be a slate cold environment where the sex part of it doesn't even play in. The fact that you want to see their blood, you want to see vengeance enacted for whatever reason from the past is directing you to do it, has nothing to do with your fucking dick getting hard.
I think psychologists of serial killers everywhere would completely disagree with
what you said. But he's different. He's not a classical serial killer because he's being influenced by the ancient supernatural.
Who's a classic serial killer?
He's a classical serial
crimes
killer.
Crimes of Rage. And pass.
No, he shouldn't get. Okay, not all of them get their fucking dicks wet and hard for fucking killing people. Some of these people do it for no reason except they want to do it. My point is, if you read into that and you read it like that, I feel like I'm watching a goddamn Norman Bates movie about why he wants to fuck his mom and he wants to kill all the girls that come up to the hotel. That's what he's doing. Norman Bates is classic understanding. He had a weird incestual relationship with his mother that he never got fully over, and that's why he killed all the women that looked like good-looking girls. The
Freudian thing goes back to the psychologist.
But I don't think Michael Myers wasn't even in control of his own brain, because his voice from the past was telling him to do all this stuff.
But it was the one giving him these feelings. Well, it's not little Mikey Myers that's feeling this boner.
By the way, I do like the fact that they do mention the fact that the voice is stronger now, because Michael had already killed at this point, and they said when he does kill, Michael Myers thought like that would be enough to satiate.
Yeah.
And then he realized
Annie and Bob.
But then he was like, dog, I reached old Madden level. I'm at old Madden level now. Before I was pro. Now I'm old Madden level. And like he's like, oh, it's gonna take more. It's gonna get more.
I thought when I got to 40 in Halo I'd be satiated. But no. I've gotta get that 50.
Where's my general?
I can feel it pumping in my veins.
5 stars.
And that's what he does. When he goes later on and he sees Annie and Bob, it actually says after that incredible moment of thrill as he plunged the blade into the dark haired girl's abdomen, being Annie, slid her stomach open to the ribs.
It's a lot more vicious.
He had come down to a state of euphoric calm. For a while he thought that the lust was permanently discharged and the voice quieted. That was how it had been then with Judy, but then he'd been 6 years old. Now it was different. The sight of the couple on the couch brought new stirring in his body, and the voice whispering to him once more, he knew this night was not over.
Okay, let me ask you a question, and you guys can answer it as well. Do you think at that point that Michael Myers, the actual human being of Michael Myers, wanted to stop? Like whatever was left of his psyche, whatever human part of Michael Myers, he said he thought that it would stop then. Like he was like, okay, it's been satisfied. Like I can stop. I can turn myself back in. I can go back to Dr. Loomis. I can stop. Like, do you think that he wanted to?
Yeah.
Like, do you think that in a way he was like, it fucking got my dick hard, and I fucking came as I slit her fucking throat and all that stuff. Well, he probably did.
I think,
and then he's like, okay, I'm done.
I think, dude, it took hold of him at such a young, like he gave in to the voice at such a young age that at this point he's comfortable giving into it. It's all he knows. Well, so he just lets it take over. I don't think little Mikey Myers fights it at all.
Yeah, but in the way that it's reading in the novel, in the psyche of Michael Myers at that point, he thought the euphoric state had passed and it was all good.
Yeah.
So he probably was thinking like, okay, I just shot myself with some heroin of sex and drugs and rock and roll, and now it's good. I'm good now. I got my fix,
right,
and I can go back. But it didn't stop.
Because he's
a 21-year-old man, because the demands are higher, and the voice knows that. That's the only thing. Like, the entire time I'm reading this novel, it's great. Like, okay, by the way, the guy did a phenomenal job writing it. The entire time I'm reading it, though, I'm thinking, like, this is not really what Michael Myers is a victim, in a way. Because he's possessed by this fucking druidic Irish thing.
Mm-hmm. So, well, I mean, he can still be part human and be a victim. But, he's just, he took hold of it at such a young age, he doesn't know anything else.
Well, it kind of pulls you out of the whole character, though. Like, Michael Myers not having a backstory makes him more scary.
I think it keeps it in the mythos in a good way.
So it's different, but yeah. Okay.
And that's what I was going to say, though. Like, there's a point in the book where he actually mentions Michael knows now that he's gotten out. It says Michael, he still kind of thinks like a child, though. It says at one point in the book, he's like, well, now that I've got out, they can't stop me this time because I'm a full-grown man. Like, he's like, I'm big and you can't tell me what to do.
Do you remember what Loomis says? He's like, Loomis said, the nurse says, well, why didn't he just walk out if he had control over the staff? He's like, because he had it made. Yeah. He had it made in the asylum. He didn't have to do anything. He had it made.
Yeah.
Shawshank Redemption, Andy Dufresne, you wish.
A lot of the stuff, a lot of the beats, a lot of the exact things are the exact same. So we'll get to the very end of it now. Really, the only big difference between the end of this of the movie and the end of the book is that Laurie stabs him in the dick. She stabs him right in the dick.
It says growing. It does say that.
At one point in the
all the way up to the fucking guts.
And he lets out a huge howl, like at one point where she stabs
my dick!
Oh, you did not!
My winner!
Not I did not get stabbed in the dick. I did not.
Tell me apart, Lisa.
And not only that, but you can see here in this novel where the writers of Halloween 2 actually took lines from the book and inserted them in the movie. Before all this stuff's going on, Loomis actually talks to somebody else when he's going up to the house where Michael is, and the guy's like, is this the joke? And then Loomis says the classic line is, or the guy's like, I've been trick-or-treated to death tonight.
You don't know what death is!
Yeah, that's actually in this book. Not only that, but at one point, when Loomis shows up to save Laurie, he shoots Michael off the balcony, just like he does in the movie, but he starts to reload. He's gonna go finish the job. A lot like they mentioned in Halloween 2018.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I really got excited when reading it, because it was 1978 when this novel
came
out.
Did you have sex member throb?
So hard. But when Dr. Loomis walks down the steps with Laurie in tow, and he's like, I'm gonna make sure. I thought that Dr. Loomis was gonna come up, hold the gun to Michael's head, and right before, like right in the exact moment he was gonna pull the trigger, a weird or Haddonfield cop was gonna tackle him. Will Patton was gonna tackle him to the fucking ground, and then that's it.
The perfect time.
That's it. And I'm like, fuck yeah! Like, that's what they got it from. But no,
would have been the perfect.
It didn't
time.
Happen that way. But
yeah. But he does say the line from Halloween 2. He's reloading the gun to finish the job, and she's like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "Heightens my sense of security," just like in Halloween 2,
James Bond.
Cool.
Yeah.
But in this, the only difference is he doesn't look over the balcony. He walks downstairs. He goes around the house, and he looks down where Michael should be. Michael's gone, just like in the movie. And the actual novel ends on Laurie standing behind him, saying, "You know, was that the boogeyman?" He's like, "Yes, I do believe it was." End of the novel.
I mean, amazing,
wonderful read. You gotta check it out.
I'm gonna do the Shia LaBeouf.
It's Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah. Shia Surprise.
Shia Surprise.
Yeah, it was like, the novelization is great. The backstory is there. For anybody that wants to enjoy it, it's there. As far as like giving a little bit more of a characterization to Laurie Strode and her friends and the boyfriends and all the happenings between is all there. There are some really good stuff in the novel. And there are some really bad stuff in the novel. There are things that I don't think at all agree with the movie over. Like, over time, I think that if you had had the fact that Michael just got off on shit, I understand psychologically why that would be a thing, but I don't feel like it fits in the Halloween franchise or the mythos of Michael Myers. However, I do think it's a novel that everybody should check out and watch and appreciate and love and put their fingers on.
Into the night. Deeper and deeper. Deeper and deeper.
Getting right in that fucking vagina.
I think the novelization's fantastic. It's not something I would necessarily... I'd have to think on it a while if someone asked, hey, do you want this injected?
It's a reflective piece, yeah. For sure.
Like, do you want this injected into the movie? I don't know. Again, as we mentioned, I'd rather keep Michael in the secret, float him right in the middle. We don't know if he's supernatural. We don't know what his true intentions are. But as I said before, of all the conjectures about why Michael does what he does and the backstory and the reasoning behind Michael, if I had to go with one, this is my absolute fucking favorite.
Yeah,
I think this did the greatest job of all of them of attempting to give Michael a backstory. Bravo for that. It's a really hard thing to do. But yeah, I thought it was a great fucking read. So you guys definitely check it out if you're a Halloween fan. And that's the question of the day, really. How do you guys feel about Michael's throbbing sex member? And that sounds like a joke, but I actually mean it.
I bet it's 5 inches.
We discussed it quite a bit here. How do you guys feel about that? Because a lot of people think that there's some sex motive in there. So comment down below.
That's just because they want to fuck Michael. Why do you always want to fuck a psychopathic killer?
I think it's interesting because it, you know, ties into the psychological serial killers. But
he just becomes Ted Bundy then.
If you make that the only thing that drives him, yeah. But that being a little bit of the background, a little touch of some fucking sexual frustration, it's kind of weird. I don't know.
I'm sexually frustrated all the time, and I don't want to kill somebody.
I don't know if I want it in the movie, but the thought that that's there in the background is kind of cool. So comment down below, listener. Justin, thank you, man. Fantastic fucking Patreon pick. Guys, comment down below. We love your fucking faces. If you're new to the channel, click that subscribe button and get some goddamn wham opinion.
Fucking get a megaphone next time. It'll be like less loud. Son of a bitch. My sex is on fire.
You're a throbbing member.
Oh god, I gotta put it down.
We watched a movie. Yeah. We watched a movie. We watched it. We watched a movie.